You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Welcome to What's Eric Eating? Culture Map's bi-weekly look at all things Houston bars and restaurants. I'm your host, Culture Map editor Eric Sandler. Today on the show, we'll talk about some news in the world of Houston restaurants, as well as our meal at a new restaurant you may want to try. To do that, I'm joined by my co-host this week. She is the owner of Heights Grocer, Mary Clarkson. Welcome back to the show. How are you?
I'm great, Eric. Happy to be here. Thank you for having me, as always.
Thanks for doing this. Let us dive right into the news of the week. Topic number one, I want to talk to you about a couple of closings that generated significant readership on Culture Map in the last week. The first one is Auden, the eclectic vegetable-forward restaurant in Autry Park. This is a little bit of a bummer. I just had Kripa and Kirthan Shenoy, the owners of Auden, on the show a few weeks ago. They obviously did not hint or suggest anything about Auden being in trouble. And of course, Auden was also named an honorable mention by Texas Monthly on their Best New Restaurants of 2025 list. That was in March, so very recently. Mary, let me just ask you, did you have any experiences at Auden, or what do you think maybe caused it to struggle?
I think location is kind of hard here. I mean, there's a lot around it, but Autry Park in and of itself, I think maybe is still needing to get people's attention. There's so many options out there, and I think, you know, it's just difficult to get people's attention in the first place and to maintain it. And I think that might have been part of the problem here.
You know, I think that's probably right. I think the difficulty for Auden is they were first in Autry Park, and I think people have sort of discovered it since then. They've been to Annabelle Brasserie, they've been to MF Lobster. You know, they're going to Turner's Cut. Even more recently, they're going to Doko and Bardoko. But, you know, being first, I think, was difficult. And also, I give Kirthan a whole bunch of credit for being really honest about this. You know, when they opened, they didn't quite know what they were. You know, I think he and Kripa had a vision for what they wanted it to be, but they had, you know, investors and business partners who were saying, oh, well, you got to have this dish and that dish on the menu, because look at what's around you. Look at what you're competing with. You've got to have your own take on some of these things. And I think there was just some confusion, you know, both in the marketplace, as people would sort of go to this restaurant and be like, well, I don't quite understand what it wants to be. And even in the minds of the operators, like what are we? And I think over the course of the couple of years that they were open, I think they had figured that part out. But if you went initially and were sort of turned off by it, it's really hard to get people to go back. And you know, maybe the Texas Monthly thing would have gotten them into a better position if they had had a little more time. But it seems like by the time that press came in and really by the time they recorded the podcast, that they were pretty well on the road to making a final decision.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's better to just call it than let it, you know, die a slow, painful death.
Yeah, and I think they still have Edo. They're,
yeah,
you know, coffee.
And it's fantastic, by the way.
Right. Edo is so good. And I could see them doing multiple Edos. Or I don't know. Do you rebrand it as HOU dough and then just like start knocking them out in different locations. You know, I don't know. They haven't said anything about that, but you know, that's a real winner for them. And I could see that growing, and maybe they've just decided like, we've got something that people really love. So let's focus on that and see what's next.
And I think that's what people knew them most for early on. And I think also the more casual the concept, probably the easier it is to replicate it.
Absolutely. All right. And then the other one I want to discuss with you is Mi Cocina. This is the Dallas-based Tex-Mex restaurant. It's huge in Dallas. There's 20-something locations in the DFW area.
Then it can stay in Dallas.
Well, it opened to considerable fanfare right next to River Oaks District in that space that had been Seasons 52. And here we are basically a year and a half later, and it's already gone. And so I guess if you want to say something mean about Dallas restaurants, here's your chance.
It's like a layup. Thank you. I'll take it from here, sir. No, in all honesty, I only want restaurants to succeed. It's really hard in any environment, especially the one we're in right now. But I do not love Dallas. I'm going to be real with you. Like, the only time you're going to catch me in Dallas is for the Texas OU game. Otherwise, that city does not exist in my mind.
Well, all right. I mean, you know, I had this thought, you know, I only went to Mi Cocina once. I liked it fine. I have other Tex-Mex restaurants I like more. And so when it came time to spend my Tex-Mex dollars, I tend to go to my two personal favorites. You mispronounced Papacitos, first of all. And as everyone who listens to the show knows well, my heart belongs to Candente. So, yes. You know, between Candente, Papacitos, and Ninfas, like, my Tex-Mex cravings are pretty well satisfied. And if I'm really going to mix it up, I'll get a little nostalgic, go back to the high school days and go to Chewy's. And so there was no room in my personal dining rotation for Mi Cocina.
Tell me you're from St. John's without telling me you're from St. John's. Chewy's was your favorite. El Tiempo was this Episcopal girl's favorite. Just saying.
All right. But I do think that there's a contrast between Mi Cocina, which is kind of come and gone. And then, you know, I went to Mexican Sugar with Michael Fulmer and Felice, and we talked about that on the show recently, and it was absolutely packed.
Pretending to be a restaurant.
Well, they have a big bar downstairs and then a huge whole full-service dining room upstairs that was also packed.
Yeah.
And, you know, when Pastore closed in that Regent Square development, we thought, oh, well, it's the development that's a problem. It's not catching on. No. The right concept is doing just fine. It turns out that it was Mexican Sugar. It wasn't Pastore. And that's FB Society, which owns Mexican Sugar, which is why I'm talking about this, is also from Dallas. And they've done very well with 60 Vines and with Whiskey Cake and Haywire and everything that they do. And so, you know, I don't quite understand what the difference, you know, like I said, I only went to Mi Cocina once. I heard good and bad about it. Some people liked it, some people didn't. But it never seems to have caught on versus Mexican Sugar that's just going gangbusters. And so it's not that Houstonians hate Dallas restaurants. I know that's what the Cane Rosso folks sort of decided when their Houston time came to an end. But we have seen some Dallas success, right? The Rustic is doing very well. And then Vandalay Hospitality is obviously doing very, very well with both Hudson House, which they opened one in River Oaks. Another one is coming to Rice Village pretty soon, and Drake. So it's not that we hate Dallas restaurants. We're just, I think Dallas restaurants just have to try a little harder to win us over.
Yeah, I think so too. And like, listen, with everything going on with Michelin, more and more out of town, not just Dallas or Austin, but out of state groups are going to come for Houston. So, you know, there will be successes from these groups. That's inevitable. But I think a lot of times people not from here don't necessarily understand our market as well. So sometimes they become misses, right? So shit happens.
All right. Do you take anything away from this wave of closings? I mean, I keep having people in my DMs being like, it seems like there's a lot of closings. It seems like every week on the show, we talk about a closing. Are there more closings than usual, or is this just that by recency bias where, you know, we're in the middle of it, so it feels worse than it is? I mean, there's you know, because from my perspective, it seems like there's always restaurants that open and restaurants that close. And I can't really tell if this is worse than normal or not.
I mean, I talk with Bobby Eagle's spoken with me about it before. You know, there's a lot of restaurants closing. There's even more to come. Real estate attorney and broker brain of mine sees a lot of it coming too, because it comes across my desk of people that are shopping, you know, to sell places before they actually happen. Like you take Andiron, for example, you know, I think they were taking the time that they did before they closed because they were looking for a buyer. And my understanding is they found one. So I think it's happening a lot. And yes, I mean, the more you see it in the headlines, the more at the forefront it is. I also think, you know, a lot of this PPP money from COVID and has run out and lease renewals are up. And I've got a friend and a client of mine that, you know, has a 10-year lease coming up. And do you want to renew for 10 years in this environment where cost of goods has never been more expensive? Labor's never been more expensive. Landlords have never been greedier. I mean, a good landlord is someone who understands that they can only charge so much increase and that they want a partner in their space because it's very expensive to relet. You know, it costs about a year of a lease to pay everybody that's involved in a transaction like that and tenant improvement allowance. So I think a lot of people are really asking themselves what it is that they want in the future of their businesses, whether they want to grow more or just stay stabilized. But rents can't keep going up at the amounts that they are and expect any of these smaller chef-driven concepts that you and I love so much to really have a fair shot because it's not sustainable.
Right. No, I think that's right. I think, I mean, we see new chef-driven concepts opening. They still happen, but they're happening. It's becoming less and less frequent that they're happening, you know, in Montrose or the Heights, kind of in the prime neighborhoods, right? They're going out to Spring Branch or Memorial or Bel Air or whatever to try to get a little bit of a break on rent. Or we'll, you know, hopefully we'll see them more on the east side, just because I'm selfish and lazy and don't want to drive very far.
And serve a community that actually needs it and wants it. I mean, I think that's a right call for a lot of these operators. It's like, we don't need more restaurants in Montrose. Like, I love Montrose. You do too. I love Upper Kirby, but there's such density in these neighborhoods. And so the natural course is for these restaurateurs to spread, bar owners to spread outward, because it's just not affordable inside. You've got the Tocamaderas of the world and these huge restaurant groups that seemingly have unlimited private equity capital. Nobody can compete with that.
Right. And while we're here, let me just put in a request. There is not a decent, like, contemporary cocktail bar, like in the Westheimer corridor, like near the Galleria. Like, I was having dinner at Winsome Prime last week, and there was not an obvious place to get a drink afterwards. And that is painful. Like, why isn't there a bar just somewhere near there? Like, why can't I get a decent cocktail in not a restaurant on a weeknight that's not like a sports bar or a nightclub, somewhere nearish to the Galleria? That I don't know why that doesn't exist. I think that it should.
I agree.
All right. Let's move on to topic number two. The team behind Amarina, Chef Jossie Bindra and his business partners in the Kahani Social Group, have claimed the former Sin Chow / Beaver space at Washington and Sawyer for Kitchen Rumors, which they are describing as reimagined classic global fare with an Indian twist. Think dishes like bison short rib nahari, pan-seared branzino, and panna cotta with Indian flavors. Mary, I know you make your way to the Woodlands every now and then. Have you had a chance to dine at Amarina?
I have. This is an example of a suburb restaurant that probably does really well just because it's got a nice mix of, you know, oil and gas, lawyer, business expense type people that are dining there, as well as residents of the Woodlands. I mean, the Woodlands is kind of like a pretty high net worth suburb, I would say. You know, people can afford to dine out. They dine out frequently. But this menu is expensive. So I'm curious as to whether they will make any changes to it just to maybe adapt it to a little more casual price points. Their price points are real high.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're not opening a second location of Amarina. They're opening Kitchen Rumors, which will be its own concept. So I'm not really worried about...
Yeah, more casual, I think they'll do better, right?
Yeah, well, because they just did these two fast casual spots, Bowl and Pok Pok Po in Midtown next to Medium Rare and you know, Gen Korean Barbecue and all that stuff. So, you know, I think they have some sense that, you know, tailoring these concepts to the market. I think from my perspective, the interest is more like, you know, I really like what they do at Amarina. Pok Pok Po is, you know, I like fried chicken. So that's an easy sell for me. And I'm sort of curious to see like what they do when they're sort of taking Indian flavors and applying them to these other dishes. So I'm certainly intrigued by this. I think that Xin Chow kind of showed that location off of Washington can be really successful when it's executed properly. And, you know, that business relationship kind of ran its course, but,
come on, OG Beavers. Give it a real shout out.
I had so many good meals at OG Beavers. The chicken fried steak. When Bobby Hugel was their head bartender making the drinks.
Shout out. You know,
that is Houston restaurant culture, like 2008, 2009. It was a pioneering. It was a pioneering place in its time.
It's the beginning of the future. Absolutely. That era.
All right. You know what? I'm going to say that does it for the news of the week. We'll be right back with our restaurants of the week. Stick around. Mary, for our restaurants of the week, I want to start with Chardon. This is the new French restaurant at the Thompson Hotel on Allen Parkway. It is led by Chef E.J. Miller. We know E.J. from all kinds of stuff over the years. He was a sous chef at Saltaire Seafood Kitchen. He was Ryan LaShane's right-hand man when he opened Riel several years ago. He worked for Michael Mina at International Smoke. And then he had Muse, that like kind of small plates concept on West Dallas that unfortunately didn't last very long. But, you know, now he's doing French food at a hotel. So, I mean, let me just ask you before we talk about the food, what were some of your thoughts on the design of Chardon when you walked into it?
Okay, so.
And let me just remind everyone that you used to own a French restaurant called La Olivier.
Yes.
That became Avondale Food and Wine. So you have deep knowledge of French restaurants.
I do. And I have a love and affection for French food, French wine, all things French, for sure. I think this is you and I had brunch at Tocamadera a couple of weeks ago and it was fantastic, but I think this might be the best restaurant within the Thompson Hotel campus. And by that, I mean, I think it is the most broadly appealing restaurant. Soul 7 is the hotel restaurant upstairs. It's fine. It's whatever. This is really good. I think the design is really pretty. It's elegant. It's kind of got the milk glass light pendants that reminds me of State of Grace, the chandeliers. The bar lighting's really sexy and pretty, very comfortable. It feels high end, but not necessarily at a crazy high price. I don't love the French art on the walls, but that's fine. It's just me like nitpicking.
Yeah. I mean, it's got that kind of classic bistro look to it. Right.
Yeah.
And it's a very comfortable, very pretty dining room.
It's sexy. And it's a place women want to be, which I always like. Like, it's not heavy handed. It's not dark woods and dark colors. It's light and bright.
Yeah, big, big windows, lots of light.
Yeah.
It does feel, you know, the Thompson is an upscale hotel. It's catered to an upscale clientele. You know, there are condos above the hotel floors that people are paying millions of dollars for. This this feels appropriate in that environment. This feels of a piece with that.
I will say that one of the times I've been there now, three or four times, for different types of experiences, sometimes just cocktails, sometimes a full meal, or whatnot. But I was there recently with a client of mine that lives in the high rise tower, and the dining room looked like a who's who of who lived in the building and just people we see in and around Houston. So I think that's a really good sign that people in the building like it enough to come down and stay there. It's a good sign of approval.
And then, you know, you owned a French restaurant. You also currently own a wine shop. So just say something about the wine list, because it's deep in French bottles.
It is, you know, my yum rating system. So I'm going to use it here. It is a yum, yum wine list. There are bangers on this list. Anytime I see a Becky Wasserman wine, she was an amazing woman who represents her company, represents 100 plus of the best domains in Burgundy. You and I had a great a Burgundy red from her for what's $80 on the wine list in a city that has gotten so expensive to drink wine out. Like, I can't do a 4 or 5 time markup. I won't do it. I'm just not willing to. I'm not gonna name names. But this wine list for the restaurant food experience that you're getting is one of the best values and best values, most exciting wine list I've seen in a minute. And it was really thoughtfully put together. So that I love.
Right. And credit to Renato, their wine director, because he really knows his stuff. And he did good, really good work at Andiron in the early days. And it's nice to see him someplace where he can really utilize his knowledge and his talents. Which brings me to the food, because, you know, I haven't said to EJ, like, I really think you've been kind of waiting for an opportunity like this, because I liked some of what he was doing at Muse.
He's showing off and I like it.
Well, but he was trying to do too many things at Muse. There wasn't someone who either like told him no or like put some restrictions on him or whatever. And now it's like, okay, this is a French restaurant. You have to make French food, but you can make it your way, which means he's using like really good Texas ingredients. He's buying like an absolute ton of Wagyu beef from RC Ranch, which is outside of Houston. But it still works within this like French restaurant rubric. And I'll just put it out there. I mean, this was one of the most delicious meals I've had this year. And not that I didn't think that EJ would be doing a good job. I just was not prepared for how good our meal was. And I had someone message me afterwards and be like, well, what should we order? And I was just so overwhelmed. I'm like, you can order basically all of it. I mean, we had a Dover sole that was filleted tableside, spot on, like moist, flaky, in that kind of classic butter sauce. We had their beef cheek bourguignon, which was just, you know, rich and fatty and hearty and satisfying. And then we had a duck dish that was, you know, beautifully
duck was phenomenal. Rare
with a cassoulet with the leg on the side. And that duck dish was like $40, like $45, I think. And it was a very generous portion. And, you know, just everything on that menu, you know, you don't like, yes, there's a 2-pound lobster pot pie. And it is both
ridiculous,
very pretty to look at and very tasty, but you don't have to. I mean, if you don't want to spend the $120 or whatever that is, you don't have to. Like, you can have the beef cheek or the duck in the $40 price point. And, you know, I think, you know, we talk about kind of value for money. I think you could have a really nice dinner for two here, given everything on the menu. And given how affordable the wine list is, in that like kind of $200 range, which I know isn't cheap, but is kind of the freight, right? Like, it's kind of what I expect to spend at a restaurant like Nancy's Hustle or Riel or any of these other places that we like to go to. But to get, you know, a pretty refined French meal at that price point feels like a bit of a value to me. And especially compared to some of the restaurants nearby, you know, I don't set enough. You said enough bad things about Kakoti based on one meal. I don't need to rail on it. But that was a restaurant where there was some good and some bad. And I was like, eh, I don't really need to come back here. I can't wait to go back to Chardon.
They're not open for lunch or brunch yet. They're going to get there and build up to that, and they should take their time and all the things. But I'm excited to see what that looks like for them. And I honestly don't think this restaurant, I think it's very affordable for what you're getting, right? It feels kind of like a Bouchon in Napa Valley. It feels like a fresh take on French for this city rather than just kind of stayed. You know, there's classic dishes on there, but there's also some more modern presentations. And the food is really, really good. And I don't think the city has enough good French food. I think it has some okay French food, you know, or you could just come to my house and have some really good French food. But, you know, I think it has a lot of mediocre in terms of French. So I'm excited that there's somewhere this good and they're charging a fair price for what you're getting. It feels like a very high-end experience. And yeah, this wine list, I'm excited to see what they add and how it evolves. I think it's a really affordable place to drink. I actually think one of its closest competitors, and you may or may not agree with me on this, but Brasserie 19 is right around the corner. So I hope they're paying attention because this food is very good. So is Michael Hoffman's at B19. But the wine list at B19 could come learn some lessons from this bad boy.
Yeah, you know, I like Brasserie 19. To be clear, you go there all the time. You're friends with Michael. You're friends with Charles Clark, the owner. You know, I have a lot of respect for Brasserie 19, and I go there, you know, a couple times a year or whatever. I don't find that menu as exciting as I did the Chardon menu.
I think there's some specials that Chef Hoffman puts on there that are really good. And the spring menu are we in spring?
Yeah, spring.
Right, we're technically in spring, even though it feels like summer and my body is confused. but I think, you know, there are some really interesting dishes, but I think as an entire menu itself, Chardon is really setting itself apart right now. And I'm excited about it because I think there's always room for more. And I think competition is a good thing. And if it elevates everybody, if it makes, you know, a competitor's wine list better and more thoughtful, then great. I know that they just hired, B19 just hired the Somme from Savoie. I don't know her personally, but I hear exciting things about her and everything else. So let's give her a chance and see. Maybe she dips into what's going on with a really fair markup at Chardon and the food. I hope people get inspired by seeing other restaurants that are doing good things. That's what I want. I want everybody to do their best and innovate.
Right. No, and absolutely. And Brasserie 19 is such an established part of that community.
I think there's less freedom, right, than maybe Chardon has because it's brand new.
Right. And nothing's going to change their success. And I'm certainly not predicting that. It's still, you know, a very popular restaurant. But I guess what I am saying is, if you like the French food at Brasserie 19,
you're going to love Chardon.
Or if you're a regular at Etoile or Café Rabelais, or, you know, if you're going to Cocody, you should really go to Chardon because it's really very compelling. You know, the duck, the sole, the pâté and croûte, that foie gras torchon with the onion tart, with the cured beef tongue. I mean, such a smart dish, right? The kind of fatty beef tongue with the sweetness of the onion going along with the richness of the foie. Like just, you know, it's a pretty classic combination, but it's done very well. And the only other word that I have to say about the food is the desserts were really good. I mean, those, I would go back just for profiteroles. Like if we do another
date night draft. Macaroon dessert. Holy crap.
Yeah. I would draft Chardon just for desserts if we ever did another progressive date night draft. I was very impressed by the pastries going on over there.
And they're also building out a patio, so I'm excited to see the patio. Only because people in this town, anyone who tells me differently is lying. Everybody loves a people watching parade show. The night you and I were there, what did you see across the street? What car did you see that you loved?
I saw a Porsche 918 Spyder, which is a $2 million supercar, and they only made, they made like 1,000 of them for the world.
Okay, so just so people understand where this is, it is located directly across from Toca Madera. So you get to see the comings and goings and all things Toca, and I actually think there will be a lot of back and forth. Like, I envision maybe, you know, one night a couple goes and has drinks and a little nibble at Chardon, and then they go have dinner at Toca, or vice versa. So I think the people watching when this patio is done is going to be, it's going to be pretty good.
Absolutely. All right. And then just briefly, I just want to mention the Houston's pop-up that Justin, you ran at Theodore Rex this week. You know, Justin is very open. He's very vocal about his affection for the restaurant Houston's, now known as Hillstone, although he will never call it that. And he started this, you know, in the lockdown phase of the pandemic, before T-Rex reopened for dine-in. They did this to go, a menu inspired by Houston's. And then they brought it back last year for a couple of nights. And then they did it this year for a full week. And it's obviously, it's done with a lot of love. You know, it's done by someone who really appreciates Houston's. And so you have the spinach artichoke chip and the shrimp cocktail and the French dip sandwich and the
taki, the beef taki roll or beef maki rolls. Those were awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. So Mary, what did you, we didn't eat there together, but we did both.
We're going together, but separately.
Yes. So what did you think of your meal at Houston's?
I was influenced by the several vodkas that I had had at River Oaks tennis tournament party prior, which meant I had an extra good time, and was feeling all the feels. So we had, the salmon, the smoked salmon, which was delish. Super tender, those beef rolls, which I liked. I thought that was a little something different. And then we split a French dip, a bottle of Barolo, and that sundae. Get out of here with that sundae. That sundae, I don't, just give me the chocolate sauce right now. Like, insane, delicious, over the top, everything you want from a Houston's experience. It was great.
No, absolutely. And the only thing is, I sort of left and I was thinking, like, how funny would it be if Justin opened an American Grill concept in the mode of Houston's with a name that wouldn't get him sued for trademark infringement. But then I kind of wondered like,
is I want to tell you from Justin.
Well, I think is part of the appeal of this that, like, you can only get it for 1 week a year, right? Like, yeah. I don't know how, like, would I go to Houston's once a month if Justin decided to do it full time? Or is the excitement the fact that he does it once a year for a week and it books out immediately and it's kind of the CNBC food event of that week?
He used to only do it for a weekend, I think, right? And so it was really popular, and then he expanded it to a week. So I think this is the sweet spot. We don't need to do like Houston Restaurant Weeks, which is over a month now and is just a little too much. So give the people what they want for a limited amount of time and you'll sell out and be booked. You know, every seating will be booked, which this has been. And I think tonight is its last night. So
yes, tonight is its last night, which means when people are listening to this on Tuesday, it will be too late. But I looked on Resy and there were no seats available anyway. So it's because there was a part of me that's like, well, I didn't get the crab cake. I could go back for the crab cake and one more round of shrimp cocktail. It's like, oh, well.
Oh, I did the salad because it came with two chicken tenders. Somebody told me that shortcut. And I was like, okay, turn up. We get a salad and the chicken tendies, the tempura butter. Yum. Freaking yum.
Yeah. No, they're fantastic. There should be more tempura chicken tenders. You know, as much as I like Emmanuel Chavez's chicken tenders at Melrose, they were very tasty. I do just miss the tempura chicken tenders of Houston. So even to get them for a weekend in the context of Houston's made me very happy.
Delicious. Super glad I went. And I ordered completely different stuff than the year before with you. And I actually liked last night's version for me. It was a little lighter, but still, you know, had some classics on there. So it was nice having both over the last couple of years and a comprehensive take on the menu. It was so much fun.
Absolutely. All right, Mary, I'm going to say that does it for our Restaurants of the Week. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it for today's show. Thank you so much for listening. Join me on Thursday when my guest will be Sean Gall from Camerata.
Life is a workout, and Smoothie King is here to help you power through. Whether you're crushing morning miles or sprinting through back-to-back meetings, give your body the energy, protein, and power it needs to help you conquer your goals. Only at Smoothie King.